Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Monday it is. It's another Super Bowl week. It seems like we do this every year now, because we kind of do. Chiefs, Eagles, coming up in just 6 days. Who's ready for that? We'll get you ready for that here on Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock and Tommy Caster. We have a lot to get to on a Monday. No football this weekend, and it's still a wild and crazy reaction Monday. Thank you to the NBA for jamming and forcing its way into the show content for the first time this season. But we'll get all of that, massive NBA trades that we can discuss as much as we can. It's, of course, college basketball country, and we had two outcomes this weekend that are pretty wild and crazy, and we'll have both of those covered. KU with one of the more disappointing losses it's seen in a long time, and K-State with one of the most impressive wins it's seen in a long time. Voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, will join us here in just a little bit here, in this hour, actually, to talk about the Cats' big win up in Ames. We will get some Royals talk in, the trade that they made last week, and there's some other things, you know, about things that maybe were going to happen that didn't happen. Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, will also join us later in the next hour to talk about that. Tommy, we had the beautiful weather this weekend. It felt really nice. How are you this morning?
Man, I'm good. Ready to kick things off. You know that it was a wild weekend, and when it was a big NBA story, when I'm actually texting you about that. Like,
yeah,
I'm on record. I don't follow the NBA much. I don't really like it. I don't care for it. But I'm even like talking about the NBA, like with you. You and I are going back and forth on it over the weekend. So it was a wild weekend, no doubt about it.
We all like the NBA when it gets to the postseason, when it comes to the star players, right? And in those things, and it was some pieces have fallen here over the last couple of days. And I'll, you know, we won't lead the show at this or anything, but I will tell you that I think this is the worst trade I've ever seen in the NBA, Luka Doncic, and maybe one of the worst I've ever seen in sports, but we can discuss. And then the other trades that were made the next day, back that up 100%. But later, we'll talk Cats. We'll talk KU. We've got Chiefs coming up in Super Bowl week, Tommy, which I think will always lead. K-State talk coming next, and KU later this hour. We'll give away some HTO on the program today, so make sure you stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. The beautiful weather. Tommy, did you get out and play golf? We all know Crestview, great sponsor of this program. I went out and hit the range. So I got about 15, 20 minutes in on the range out there at Crestview. It was packed. My wife was playing tennis. That parking lot was packed. I went over to the range. We kind of had to stagger because we've had kids like everybody else on the planet who've been sick all week and weekend. So it was like, get me out of the house. I'm going out there. You went out and played. Yes.
I did. I did. Yeah. I played 9 holes yesterday with my son. We went out and I mean, it was beautiful. The weather was absolutely
so nice.
Perfect. And, you know, so really, I mean, it was great. It was wonderful. By the time I got out there, it was still pretty busy on the course. And I know a lot of people were taking advantage of that.
That just goes to show you, like, if you want to know how many people are out there having fun, you get a nice day and early February.
Yeah.
And that place was popping. But it was fun. Thanks to Crestview for their support of the program. And thanks to them for whatever they had to do with the great weather we had this weekend. Give them a call and ask them about their memberships. Yeah, we've been sick. Not me, thankfully. Knock on wood. God bless. Knock on wood. The wife and I have avoided it, but like there is flu everywhere.
It's all over the place.
So we're two of three went down. I think they're both good now. It's just like you walk around with hand sanitizer in your pocket. My hands literally bleeding last night from how much I've been washing my hands, trying to like wrangle these kids and keep them entertained. Long weekend, ready for Super Bowl week though. Maybe everybody will get it out of their system. And good, you know, good on you to everyone out there dealing with the sick kids. You know, you get something like this where it lasts a long time and their boredom will take them down before I think the flu will. So good luck, parents. Hang
Daddy,
in there.
Do you have anything that we can do? What is there to do around here? Come on, entertain us.
Like, and then of course we have one kid who's not sick and she's asked like, now what do we do? I'm like, you may have the worst weekend because they get to like play video games. They don't get to play all that often, but they do when they're sick. And I'm like, you don't get, you know, you just have to hang out with us. Sick. Yuck. Good luck, everyone. All right, Tommy, let's just, you know, kind of crack the door here on the Chiefs because we'll talk a lot of Chiefs today and all week long. This buildup, I think, is going to be all about football. And that doesn't always happen. In fact, I don't think it happened the last time these two teams played. When these two teams played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, all we heard about was Andy Reid back against the Eagles and the Kelce brothers facing off in the Super Bowl. Like for 2 weeks, that's all we heard about, right? There's nothing but football to be played here. Like all that stuff, this is all football. Like everything you see, all the storylines, all the talk, like it's all football. It's all X's and O's essentially, and I'm here for it. This is going to be an incredible matchup. I think I don't see a path where this game disappoints us. I think it's going to be an awesome, awesome football game.
Yeah, and there are so many different things, I think, storyline-wise that are, you know, separate from what we dealt with a couple of years ago when these two teams faced off. We're talking about, can Jalen Hurts get it done? Is Nick Sirianni a Super Bowl caliber championship coach? You know, can the Chiefs obviously complete this dynasty? There are so many different things that are, I think, at stake. And as we get closer and we're leading up to the game, you know, we'll dive into all of it. But I'm excited for it, man. I think that you've got clearly the two best teams in the NFL. That's not always the case. I think that's the case this season, you know, especially with what we saw in the NFC. You know, my pick going into the year, I thought the Lions would get there and the Eagles, you know, just basically ran over everybody. Of course, the Commanders knocked off the Lions. But, I think that we've got an opportunity here to, you know, get a really, really great game. And it was a great game the last time these two teams faced off in the Super Bowl.
Well, look, and let's be, the Lions had injuries. I was on Philadelphia. I thought Saquon would do exactly what he's done, which was allow Jalen Hurts to be, I don't want to say hidden or masked, because that's not fair to Jalen Hurts. It's that Jalen Hurts is not going to be what, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes is, quite frankly. Jalen Hurts is never going to be the sole reason, let's put it this way, that the Eagles win a Super Bowl. Right. Like he's not that kind of quarterback. Not that he's not great. He's great at what he does. And the thing for the Eagles this year and why this was so great is, OK, if he's not going to be what Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson is, even though he shows flashes of that. Right. We know he can at times and they've certainly surrounded him with talent. They've done everything so well. And I think their front office deserves a lot of credit for that. And, you know, Nick Sirianni probably does, too, in the way and the style that in which they play. They just take it out of his hands a lot. Now, they didn't in the last game they played, but they've got a great offensive line. Barkley allows Hurts. Basically, what the Eagles have done as a Cowboys fan, Tommy, I would tell you what the Eagles have designed and done is what has always needed to be done for Dak Prescott, right? Like, and they're different quarterbacks, but put them in a situation to succeed, and the Eagles have certainly done that for Hurts, and he is succeeding. We'll talk about all of it as we make our way through, but when we return, the big college basketball story of the weekend, one of the great upsets in college basketball history, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Cats, joins us next.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And we welcome you back into Sports Daily, and we welcome in voice of the K-State Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, in the most festive we've been in a while here on a Monday morning, coming off of a weekend of college hoops where K-State has historically one of the great wins of all time. When you consider what Iowa State has done, the win streak that they had that was snapped, K-State continues to play well, now a three-game win streak. Wyatt, I think it's easy for Cat fans to just say, God, where has this been? Too little, too late. But man, I got to tell you, in the Big 12, the reality is it's definitely not too late, right? They jumped 20 spots in the net with that win. Those are the kinds of wins that you can pile up. Now, they're going to have to overcome 11 overall losses, but they're very much now in the mix the way they're playing to get up into that top half of the Big 12, which, who knows, that might be enough. You just got to get there. So, you know, there's no sense in worrying about at this point. What a weekend in Ames.
Oh, 100%. Let's kind of set the stage of this. K-State had lost, 15 consecutive road games. Iowa State had won 29 straight at home over the last 2 years, and K-State wins by 19. I mean, I don't know how you explain it, but I do think this team has turned the corner to a certain degree on a lot of different things. I'll be honest, it was easily their best game of the year. No one would probably argue with that. They had five guys in double figures. All of the starters were in double figures. Iowa State, one of the elite offensive teams in the country, shoots 36.5%. But even if you go deeper than that, I mean, K-State had 14 offensive rebounds. They had a 21-6 advantage points in the paint. Their effort was better. Their execution was better. It was a great win. And as you said, when you start looking at some of the biggest upsets and or big victories on the road in K-State history, this was going to be in the neighborhood, no doubt about it.
Wyatt, we're talking about a guy this morning, Doug McDaniel, who has absolutely asserted himself on this team. And I think that's been such an important factor for the Wildcats turning things around in the last couple of weeks. 20 points for him, 5 assists. I don't know if you can quite put into words what he has meant to this team over the last few games. But I mean, he clearly has been the catalyst, I feel like, for what the Wildcats have been able to do.
Well, let's put it this way. K-State has won 4 times now in the Big 12. In 3 of those games, he's had 17, 15, and 20. His assists are up. His turnovers are down. His shooting percentage is still just okay. But the decision-making and the emotion of how he is playing and his trying to be a leader, more of a leader, really is kind of shining. Really proud of Doug, to be real honest with you. I think Coach Tang has probably challenged him as much as he's challenged any player since he's been here, from at least my perspective. Now, Coach Tang may disagree with that, because in the early days with Marquise Noel, he challenged him off the charts too. But I got to give Doug a lot of credit. He's a tough kid, and he's just hung with it. There's no doubt he's been a major factor in this. Coleman's been really good, too. And I know he got a lot of criticism early for he can't do this or he didn't do that or he needs to be more productive. And all of that is probably fair to a certain point. But those two guys are doing what they're supposed to be doing right at the moment.
You know, it's funny with Coleman Hawkins. And he's Coleman Hawkins is what he is. And he's kind of doing now what he's been doing. He's not going to be some premier scorer. Now, 17 points, look, that's nothing to shake a stick at, but it's the 7 rebounds. It's the 4 steals. It's like, that's what he's always been. And it's what he's doing lately. But it's interesting that the spotlight has been on him and his game hasn't really changed. It's like they've learned how to now
play off of his strengths, which is everything else that he does. So I think all of that criticism for him, while it was unfair early in the year, and he had some bad games, but he wasn't playing that bad. He was by far not the most responsible for the bad play. And it all fits now. This is what we thought we were going to get out of this team, Wyatt. Like this, it all before the season started seemed to fit on paper. Jerome Tang has his point guard. We know he likes that play iso ball and let his point guards do that. Mm-hmm. He's got this great shooter in Hassan. He's got a, you know, kind of a utility knife in Hawkins, and then all that. Like, we all thought this was going to work, and then it didn't, and now it is. So what changed?
Well, better point guard play, as we lined up line there, that's obvious. The one thing I will say I think that Coleman is doing now better than he did before is probably shot selection one. And then he's, you know what, the truth is, for a 6'10 guy, he's a pretty elite passer. And I think he has kind of figured out that he doesn't just have to score 20 every night like everybody talked about, but he can have 15 and 7 or 8 and get along just fine, especially if everybody else around him is going to be more consistent, which has also been true. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought in his overall game, Brendan Hassan Saturday was by far his best game as a Wildcat. He was doing everything, fellas, steals, diving on the floor. Go back and look at the film of that 1-3. He literally was behind the Pioneer Seed logo on the far side of the floor as we were looking at it and made a three-pointer. It's incredible. His effort was off the charts, and I think that's the other thing that people are seeing. You know, we can talk about individual plays, playing better as a team, but the reality of it is the way they're playing in terms of playing hard is a different level now than it was 3 weeks ago.
I think there was a crucial part in the second half of the game, Wyatt, where the Cyclones cut the Wildcat lead to 58-52 midway through the second half. And that was kind of the moment that at least I thought, you know, uh-oh, here we go. It's got, you know, you've got this Iowa State team that they're number three in the country and they're starting to come alive and the crowd is getting behind them and all of that. And then all of a sudden, the Wildcats just extinguished that push from Iowa State. That was some resilience that I don't think we've seen in quite a long time from Kansas State.
Tommy, that's such a great point, because I think in an earlier game like that in the season, even back to the non-conference, they would have probably given up the lead and probably lost the game. So there's growth there, too. And I can tell you, being there in person, witnessing it, the fever pitch in the building at that point when they cut it to 58-52. Keep in mind, leading up to that, there was a stretch into the first half, into the second, and this is hard for me to even say, but Stan pointed this out. K-State had a run of 30-6 against the third-ranked team in the country. And that's mind-boggling. And you're right, though. That somehow, some way, they answered offensively and defensively and kind of stemmed the tide there. And once they built it back up to double digits, you kind of got this sense, just looking at the guys like, hey, we're going to do this. And they did.
You know, it's interesting you bring up that run, because that's kind of been their thing lately, right? In these wins, they'll have one of those a game where it's just like a wild run. And that's enough if you play good defense. I mean, it is. So we can talk all day long about the offense and these players. Is there a level of defense now being played that we're good with, you know, the rest of the way? Like, have they reached a point where, like, okay, now they can, you know, now they can get in there and get scrappy and shut it? Because you can't get on a run if the other team's scoring. And that's a big part of these runs as much as anything else.
That's it. And again, I'll repeat that Iowa State shot 36.5% and scored 61 points. This is a team that averages over 80 points a game and is one of the better offensive teams numbers-wise in the country. I just felt like K-State did a really good job. Well, let's go back to the first of the game. K-State's down 13-4, and I'm sure most fans were going, see, I told you, they won a couple home games. This is a different animal on the road. I probably was thinking it to a small degree myself, right? But if you look at that 13-4 spurt, all of their – those were basically perimeter shots. They were getting nothing on the inside. And that was a trend that I thought was really something that continued throughout the entirety of the game. It probably helped that Joshua Jackson got a couple of early fouls and never really got into the flow of the game in the first half. No doubt about that. But, you know, again, I'm just going to say the effort and the defense that they've played in the last three games is just at a different level. And I think our fans are probably pretty excited about that, and they should be. Going back to what you said earlier, Jacob, I get it if they're saying, hey, where's this been all along? I think this is what we all expected all along, right? But I look at it like, well, at least they're finally there. Let's see what they do now. Because they're a pretty confident bunch, to be honest.
Well, yeah,
I wasn't expecting this. Were you?
Not at all. I mean,
that anybody was.
Yeah, on the road.
I bet it.
Sure.
I bet it. I bet the K-State win, Wyatt, believe it or not. Just going to toss that in.
I saw it.
You're a smarter man than I am.
Smart. I didn't tell you the full story. I also I put it with a KU outright win. I wasted it. I wasted it is what I did.
Well, you know what? It was a – let's just talk about that real briefly if you want to. An incredible, weird, wild weekend in the Big 12. I mean, you think about how good the league is, right? Iowa State had won 29 straight at home. That wasn't even the longest streak in the league. Think about that a second. Houston had won 33 straight. Tech beats them after losing their best player in the first 5 minutes of the game. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then the KU Baylor game. I mean, how do you describe that?
There's a word for it that I'm not allowed to say on the radio.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know, to your point, it's just
with second half, Tommy, that's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, as wild of a weekend as it was, I mean, you know, ranking all the crazy games, I think probably, I mean, it was wild just because of the circumstances surrounding it, but it probably doesn't even crack the top three, is the Arizona-Arizona State game. Arizona State, the next team that the Wildcats face. I mean, you've got Bobby Hurley pulling his team off the court to not shake hands with the Arizona folks, and now Kansas State, coming off of this huge road win in Ames, heads down to Tempe. What do you think the Wildcats need to do to follow up the effort on Saturday against Arizona State tomorrow night?
Well, effort is probably the key word there, right? I mean, if they can come into that kind of game and have that type of juice right out of the gate, they're probably going to need that to win there. If I rewatched the Arizona State yesterday morning while I was at work preparing for, you know, we're leaving today and play late tomorrow night in Tempe, so a lot of work to do there after being on the road on Saturday. But the Arizona State, Arizona, that game was anybody's game with 3 minutes to go, right?
Yeah,
it was a high level game. Both teams have a lot of offensive talent. I don't know necessarily that Arizona State is defending like K-State has been in the last three games. I'm hopeful that will be a real key factor, but it's going to be a load working against Jaden Quaintance and some of those guys. You probably saw the headbutt, I'm sure.
Yep.
Of that.
Yep.
But B.J. Freeman was good. Adam Miller was good. Jihad was good. I mean, they're not the deepest team, ASU, but they are athletic. You're going to have to play well to win there.
So, Wyatt, there's 12 or 11 or so games left. 10 games. 10 left. I'm trying to do this. So here's where I got that from. I'm thinking 12 because I think if they can get to 12 – they would be an NCAA tournament team. There's 10 games left. They would need, you know, to win. They'd need to basically go 8-2, which seems, I know it seems crazy.
Sure.
But if you look at their schedule, they get their most difficult games, at least on paper, Kansas, Arizona, and another game against Iowa State, all come at Bramlage. And then the other games they play, Arizona State, BYU, Utah, Arizona State again, UCF, Colorado, Cincinnati. Probably none of those other teams are going to make the NCAA tournament, if we're being honest with how this will play out. So you're looking at a scenario where if they win every game they should, if you want to look at it that way, or they can and can just take, you know, one of Kansas, Arizona, and Iowa State at home, there's a path there where they'd be in. They'd have whatever it is, 22 and 13, whatever it is, it would be enough. I'm telling you, it would be enough based on the, you know, every game being quad one, quad two type games, and they'd move up the Big 12 standings. It's there. It's there for them.
Well, you let's just to augment what you're saying. If you beat an Arizona, as an example, or you beat a Kansas in Manhattan or whatever. You're right. There are opportunities there, and that's going to augment your chances. That's the great part. The hard part about the Big 12 is how hard it is, right?
How hard to beat all those other teams anytime anyway. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even winning at UCF is going to be a challenge, depending on which UCF team shows, I suppose. But they are – what I just said about Arizona State, ditto. Lots of athletes – really, really fine team in my eye. And I think they're kind of like on the fringe too. West Virginia is probably the same without their best player. It's probably illogical to be thinking like we're thinking, you know, but as wild as it's been, why not dream a little bit, especially until K-State comes off whatever cloud they're hanging from, right? They've done pretty well here late. I mean, even when this started, you know, a couple of games before actually beating West Virginia, you could kind of see there were little flashes of, well, a little better there, a little better there. And now all of a sudden we're seeing this.
All right, Wyatt, it is a late night tomorrow, 9 p.m. tip out in Tempe. It's going to be a challenge. Just the time alone is going to be a challenge. People can hear it right here on the K-State Radio Network. We'd invite him to do it. Here we go. At least we got something, you know?
That's it. Yeah, that's what you play for, right? Opportunities. And this will be another really big opportunity in trying to build to a four-game streak. And I'm excited to see how they respond. I was excited going into Saturday to see what would happen. Was I overly optimistic? Not necessarily, but I was telling Coach Tang, he asked me about it. I say, I'm really prejudiced, so I always think K-State has a chance, right? And I learned many years ago that don't ever count them out. You can't take anything for granted, right? I remember playing Oklahoma in 2003, and they were supposed to kill us, right? Didn't happen that way. It went the other way, as a matter of fact. So, hey, anything's possible.
Anything's possible, and it's all right here for them. At least they're playing well. We'll start there and see how far that can take us. Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats. We appreciate it, Wyatt.
You got it. Thanks, fellas.
Man, what a game. All right, so I teased it there, Tommy, and I didn't know if I was going to talk about this, but we will, because Rick's talking trash. Says Friday, he said that KU had no chance at a one or a two seed, and I thought he was crazy. I think you're misremembering, Rick, who's been screaming from the rooftops how scared they are that KU's not going to get a one or a two seed. Tommy thinks you're crazy, thought you were crazy, probably doesn't today. That wasn't me. Like, these are my great fears coming alive. And so here's what happened with that bet. So I just get this gut feeling. Maybe it's because my kids are sick and I'm losing my mind. And I'm like, you know what? The way K-State's been playing, Iowa State's reeling a little bit. Iowa State's due. K-State's going to go up there and beat them. I was like, all right, let's see what that is on the money line. 10-1? Yeah, give me that. What's K? Oh, KU's an underdog in Waco? Let's throw them in there too. Now it's like plus 237 or whatever it is. 23-1. Throw it in there. I get through the game. I'm like, all right, here we go. Looking at the cash out, I'm like, no, we're good. We'll let this play out a little bit. KU gets a 19-point first half lead. And I'm like, God, I hate the jinx, but I'm losing my mind. I need everybody to get excited with me here. And I need to pat my own back about picking K-State. I'm going to send this out a little bit. Send it to Tommy. Send it to a couple other people. I have to go do something else, not paying a lot of attention at halftime. And then I start one of the threads of a bunch of KU fans start sending me some inappropriate things. And I'm like, what's happened here? What have I done? What have I done? The jinx is on. I Tommied the Jayhawks.
Hey, you should have cashed it out at halftime.
I know.
Why
did
you do that?
Cashed it out at halftime because I was like, they've got a 19-point lead. I'm not going to give up 60 extra dollars. It's a 19-point halftime lead. Let's talk about them next. Goodness gracious. We'll be back.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Hey, Hey, if you have a home construction need, Pepin Suter should be on your list of calls. Let Pepin bid your project, and you'll quickly see why they were the choice for us in our kitchen remodel. The work is top-notch, customer service even better, and they'll help you every step of the way. Call Pepin, 316-573-6822, or you can go to Pepin Suter, that's Suter.com. Check out all their great work. Any home construction needs, inside, outside, whatever it is, they've got you covered. Give them a call. Take their bid. You won't regret it. Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. As great as the Wildcat win was over the weekend, KU's loss was probably, I won't say equally as bad, but real close. Losing to Baylor on the road, okay. Getting outscored by 30 in the second half on the way to a loss in a game in which you led by 19 at halftime, absolutely, unequivocally unacceptable. And wouldn't you know it, Tommy, Dwan Harris, Hunter Dickinson, KJ Adams, all 30 plus minutes. It doesn't work. Didn't work last year. It's not going to work this year. It's not going to work. It's not that, that's not what their path is. And I don't know what those minutes were by half. I don't know if, they played exactly half of those minutes on their way to a 19-0 lead. But you're just not going to get the level of offense that you need with those three on the floor that much together. Just not. You give up 60 points in the second half. This Kansas defense, which we've seen absolutely shut down some of the best offenses in the country, gave up 60 points in the second half. Unbelievable. I honestly can't believe it.
Well, you can't believe it because it's literally never happened before. This is the worst blown lead in the history of Kansas Jayhawks basketball. Like, the amount of points that Baylor came back from has literally never happened in the history of this program. Not even talking about the Bill Self era. I'm talking about the storied legacy history of the Jayhawks. It literally has never happened before. And so I think that that's what makes it so shocking and so difficult to wrap your head around, is just because we're in uncharted territory right now. In my opinion, this falls squarely on the shoulders of Bill Self. He did not manage his team well in the second half whatsoever. You had guys sitting on that bench that had shown at least sparks of effectiveness, but you're riding on guys like KJ Adams and Dwan Harris and Hunter Dickinson. It's that big three. It's those guys that Bill Self has leaned on the entire season. And you know what? I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with you. It is not working. They're the most experienced team in college basketball on paper. And those three guys have regressed from last year to this year. I don't know why, but it's just happened. And you know what? That's not necessarily on Bill Self. Maybe a little bit of it is. But the fact that you're not making adjustments and you're not making changes, and that's something that Bill Self has always been known for, is being able to make those in-game adjustments to get the best lineup on the court, to be able to, maintain, or at least, try to find a way to turn things around or stem the tide or whatever. He hasn't been able to do that. And you've got Flory Badunga, you've got Rylan Griffin, you've got AJ Store, you've got Diggy Coit, you've got some of these other guys who are sitting, they're languishing on the bench, when they could absolutely come in and give you a spark, and that didn't happen in this game. And everybody knew that, like, this was happening. Like, Baylor was coming back, and there was nothing that Kansas could do to stop it because the guys that could stop it were sitting on the bench.
Well, that's the part that confuses me the most. The problem, I think, with Dickinson, Harris, and Adams that much time together is you're not going to get enough offense out of two of the three. You just aren't. Harris is timid offensively, and maybe for good reason, and KJ Adams just isn't that kind of player. So then it's all on Dickinson, who fouls out in the game. And by the way, in the second half, Baylor shoots 22 free throws, hits 21 of them. The crazy thing is, when those three are on the floor together, you do think, all right, though, but they're going to lock you down defensively, right? That's what, like, when those three are out there, they're all really – good in their own way. At least Adams and Harris are really good, and Dickinson's big, but that's a good defensive team. At least it should be. And that's where it's like, how do you give up when those guys play that many minutes? How do they give up 60 points in the second half?
Yeah.
They had enough offense because they had built a 19-point lead. That's what doesn't make any sense to me. That's KU's wheelhouse. Now they can come out in the second half. If you want to run those three out there, you're going to shut the other team down. They didn't do that. That's what's so weird about that game. It doesn't make any sense. If KU's built to do anything this year, it's to protect a first half lead. That's what they should be doing. They should be one of the premier defensive teams in the country. Otherwise, those three players don't need to be out there collectively that way for that many minutes in a game. They're all three of great use. They're all three good to great players, but not together. Those pieces don't fit, and they haven't now since Hunter Dickinson came in. It's crazy. That I just don't even know what else. I honestly, that outcome is crazier to me. Blowing that second half lead is far wilder to me than K-State going to Ames and winning a game, because it doesn't make any sense that they did that. Not that way. I mean, how do you go from allowing 21 points, Tommy, to 60?
Well, and even on top of that, too, keep in mind that Baylor, weren't they? I think they were down their top two scorers, or at least their top, like their top guy was out, right? You know, so
Edgecombe played. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't matter. They shouldn't. I don't care who. I don't care if they're playing Auburn this year. You don't blow a 19-point halftime lead when you're supposed to be one of the best defensive teams in the country, which they are. You just don't do that. You can't do that. It doesn't even seem possible. And so now we look at this as they, you know, doesn't really hurt them in the net all that much. But like this is what I think the great fear is for KU fans, and where do they land in the tournament? It's just like it's not as bad as it was last year, I don't think.
I think it is.
But it's
But it
feels the same. I don't know.
Like, yeah, Edgecombe went down with an injury early in the second half. Like he played when they scored 21 points in the first half. Right. He wasn't even part of the major comeback from Baylor.
It's wild. So they get Iowa State tonight, by the way, no time to think about it. I don't know who's more pissed, KU or Iowa State, I guess. We'll find out.
Both.
It's big Monday.
and then it's
at K-State, which no longer looks like anything anybody wants a part of. And then Colorado, Utah, BYU, who's, you know, sneaking kind of up there a little bit in the standings, Oklahoma State, Colorado. And then they finish with that gauntlet of Tech, Houston, Arizona. But two of the three are at home. I will say this because you're sick of hearing me say it. I'm worried that they won't make it to Wichita. They have a lot of wins on the schedule that if they just do what they're supposed to. I don't think they have a ton of room to screw up like they did this weekend, maybe one more time, but they're going to have to handle the business that they're supposed to handle the rest of the way to make sure that it happens. But man, I just don't know, like, what are we seeing that makes you think that's going to happen consistently?
And I think it's a combination of a couple of different things, you know, and I put a lot of the blame solely on the shoulders of the head coach. And I know he's not the one out there, you know, executing, like it's the players. I totally get that. But it's a combination of a lot of things. It's the stubbornness of not moving away from your trusted guys. But like KJ Adams, for example, and he gets a lot of flack. And I like KJ Adams. I've always liked his energy and his effort and all of that. But if you watch his overall body of work, there's nothing that tells you that he is deserving of 35 minutes a game. He is deserving of probably 20 minutes in a game, or maybe even a little bit less than that, like coming in spurts to provide you with the spark. And I don't know, you know, last year, I think this is part of the reason why you said that, like, you don't think that it's as bad as last year. I think it's actually worse because this team has gotten more experience and there's more depth and there's more talent on the roster. And you watch what like a guy like Flory Badunga does in limited minutes. And I know he fouls and I know that he's still kind of raw and rough around the edges and all of that. But you watch his body of work and you watch what he can do. And then you contrast that with what KJ Adams can do. And I don't know if anybody can make the argument that KJ Adams is deserving of 35 minutes of action and Flory Badunga is deserving of 15. Like, that doesn't equate in my head. You know, DeJuan Harris has been a pretty good distributor and a decent defender over the course of his career. But you're right. He's timid offensively. He always has been. But you watch him and then you watch, you know, guys like Shaq Moore or Zeke Mayo or whatever. And you're like, man, I understand the value of having DeJuan Harris run point.
Harris is better than them.
But I'm just talking about, like, especially offensively and the spark that you can provide offensively. It doesn't make sense in my head. And especially when you see the talent, like the Jayhawks a year ago were forced to play the guys that they had. They didn't have anybody else. They had no depth. Like, they had to. You have options now, but you're still sticking with the guys that are not getting it done for you. And it doesn't make any sense to me.
So I don't think Harris is probably okay to me. He took three threes. Like, that was at least it wasn't one of those games where he just, for whatever reason, refuses. He didn't hit any of them. I thought he was fine. Here's the solution. And we all know what it is. It's Flory Badunga. I mean, we all know what it is, but to me, it doesn't have to only be at the behest of KJ Adams. Like, get Dickinson off the floor. I don't want to see Dickinson play 31 minutes either. He's not athletic enough. He's not in shape enough, whatever you want to call it. That dude shouldn't be playing. Like, cut his minutes back to 27, get him more breaks. Run a lineup out there that's Badunga and KJ Adams.
I probably have a higher vertical than Hunter Dickinson does. Like, I think at this point, like, I'm 39 years old. I think I can jump higher than Hunter Dickinson can.
Whatever it is, and he is so good. Again, in the conversation, and should be to be college basketball's best player, but they're not doing him any favors and helping him. And he is not wired, I don't think, to play 31 minutes a game. So use Badunga, get Dickinson some more rest. Let KJ Adams be your spark plug, and it's time to turn loose Flory Badunga. It is. If KJ Adams, like, you don't even, like, even the foul issue in the young play, like, that's what KJ Adams, that's why he's valuable to this team, is because Badunga got in quick foul trouble. Let's get him off. We got KJ Adams. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, let those three split those minutes more. We should never see a game where Flory Badunga plays 15 minutes. You're kidding me?
Right. We should never see a game where Kansas, with those guys, are out-rebounded 40-27. That should never happen when you have Hunter Dickinson and Flory Badunga and KJ Adams.
Dickinson cannot play a game, Tommy, where he plays 31 minutes and has 5 rebounds.
Yeah.
He's a 7-foot-tall, 26-year-old playing college basketball. I can't play 31 minutes and get 5 rebounds.
And look, I think that there's a philosophical question with this, too, as far as the way that college basketball operates nowadays, that goes directly in contrast with the way Bill Self likes to coach, where it's trust over talent. It doesn't work in today's modern college basketball. You have to ride that talent, and that talent is Flory Badunga.
We're frustrated. Hey, tonight, they go tonight. Here we go. We'll have that. We're going to talk a lot of Super Bowl next hour. Don't go away. It's Sports Day.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, we are glad to be with you for another hour. We've got Jalen Thompson coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk about that latest Royals move, how it fit together, some other reporting, see if he's heard the same thing, that maybe there were attempts to get a bat, and instead this was backup, and whatever it is. We'll talk to Jalen Thompson about that a little bit later. We'll give away some HTO this hour. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up in the Odyssey Studios. Lots of coffee. We appreciate them for providing it for us. Tommy, we're both music guys. I forgot, didn't know, wasn't paying attention. Did you catch any of the Grammys? I usually like to record them and go back and watch the live performances. I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, I had forgotten that it was going on. My wife had it on, and it was just so on in the background as I was doing other things. Beyonce won, I think, a couple of things. I think Taylor Swift was there. That I heard Kanye West got kicked off the red carpet. Just a couple of things that I heard about, but I didn't really follow it.
Kanye West got kicked. I hadn't seen that. I know everyone's mad that Billie Eilish didn't win something.
You didn't hear about Kanye? So I don't know exactly the circumstances around it, but like he and is it his girlfriend? Because I don't think he's married now. I don't know.
You're asking the wrong dude about that.
But he and his lady friend were not invited to the Grammys. Apparently, they crashed the red carpet, and she was basically naked, like under a fur coat. And she took the fur coat off to pose for pictures on the red carpet, and they were promptly asked to leave the red carpet.
Who got out? Was it did Beyonce win Album of the Year?
Yeah, she won something.
I saw she won.
You're asking the wrong
album
person.
Of the year.
I didn't follow. It was on in the background. I don't know.
Look, don't misunderstand. I don't feel the way I feel about the Oscars. I like the Grammys. The Grammys had the live performances, and it's usually really entertaining, and you get all the cool collaborations and all that. I just forgot about it. Just didn't watch it.
They did do something for Stevie Wonder, I believe, he was like performing. So I did catch that in the background.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. I'll have to go back and look. I don't listen to enough of the music now to have like a strong take on it.
Are you a Chapel Roan fan?
Is that HOTTOGO?
Correct.
Hot to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's cool. She's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She won something, and I saw her accepting her award. And
okay. I don't even know what she looks like.
I don't know what she looks like either, because she had some ridiculous get-up on to accept the award.
I heard that. My wife's actually kind of into her and played a couple of her songs. Every time I hear her, I think, yeah, that's cool.
There's like one that's good. like a pink pony something or other. I don't know exactly what that is.
Yeah, she's good. She's good. And it's not that I don't
how out of touch do you and I sound right now? Like I don't know.
Very. Like, it's okay. Pink it's pony, not that I, something. Look, I love music, and I'm up to speed with a lot of new music, just not this music
anymore. Not popular
anymore.
Music. Right.
Right. But there are other genres of music where I'm like locked in and could tell you all the up and comers. It's just not the music that's typically like being highlighted at the Grammys. It's not that I don't like a lot of that music. I think all that music, like, again, this is not the Oscars. The Oscars, I think most of the movies that get nominated are boring and suck. I don't think that about the music of the Grammys. It's just not what I have on in the car. So it's like, okay. I don't like that either, by the way. I want to be up to speed with what the music now is, and it'll get easier when my kids get a little bit older, but
yeah,
it's not that at all. It's just not what I'm listening to right now.
In a previous life of mine, we're talking like a decade plus ago, I was in music radio. I did a lot of music radio. I ran a top 40 radio station. I was up on all of that music because I had to be for my job. And I would always joke around that there was not another 29-year-old male on the planet that knew as much about Justin Bieber and One Direction as I did at that time in my life. And it's a completely different world of mine now, and a completely different landscape in music. And I have not stayed up to date on any of it.
Yeah, it's all right. Good for them. And Travis Kelce's girlfriend is usually a big deal at the Grammys.
She was rocking a red dress, and you got to think like that's a Chiefs dress right there, getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Could be, or maybe she just likes red. Maybe. I don't know.
She did name an album that. I mean, she's got an album called Red. So
yeah,
I mean,
maybe
that could have been.
I don't know. I have fun. I still enjoy that angle of the Chiefs, you know, run currently. I think it's fun and cool, and you know, everybody likes Travis Kelce. How do you not like Travis Kelce? So, you know, but the Grammys happened last night. I'm glad we could provide you nothing of substance on that, except that
it was a great recap. Really good summarization of what happened.
Yes. Yeah. We had a good take on that.
Yeah.
Super Bowl week, Tommy, which is why there were the Grammys. It usually is on that Sunday before the Super Bowl. Man, oh man, it is all football. All football, and we're going to really dig into, you know, kind of some of these things, and the Jalen Hurts thing we had teased is a part of it. I think, you know, coaching wise, like these are just like, I don't know why there's not the pomp of it this time. It's probably because it's a rematch. It's probably because we've sort of exhausted these storylines the last time, 2 years ago, when these two teams played. But it has brought this interesting angle of, man, it's kind of all about the game. It gets all about the game here. And they'll manufacture some stuff up, but X's and O's and all of these things, it feels the same way to me that it did for the Buffalo game. Like it's super tight. It's razor thin. Could definitely go either way. I mean, the last time they played showed us that, right? The Chiefs had a couple of big plays that turned that game around for them. It is going to be intense. Like the decision-making, the mistakes, like all of it gets amplified, I think, for this matchup, because they like these are two teams that can just kill you if you let them or if you make a mistake. It just will.
Yeah, you know, Philadelphia, they're known to be able to score early and often. That's what they do. And then they can put loads of points on their opponents in really, really quick fashion. It reminds me, honestly, of the offensive onslaught that we saw in previous years from Kansas City. It's been a little bit different this season with the way that, you know, this team plays their games. But, man, you know, I remember, I always go back to the playoff game back in one of their earlier Super Bowl runs where they played the Texans and they were down, 24-0, and then scored four quick touchdowns in a matter of like 10 game minutes. Like, it was ridiculous. That reminds me a little bit of the way that Philly can do things. Now, it's a different method in which they score. They have course, lean on Saquon. They lean on Jalen, you know, running the football out of the backfield. And then they'll, you know, sprinkle in some big time plays to AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. But they definitely can score quickly and they can score a lot of points. And that, you know, definitely, even look back to the NFC Championship game. And I know that game was a lot closer for the majority of it than what the final score would indicate. But still, Philly put up 55 points on Washington. They can score a lot of points, and they can do it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and the thing about the Chiefs is I'm not sure they can track me to game like that. And I mean, they haven't all year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine if the game goes that way. Now they finally get their 30 or whatever with Buffalo and all of those things. But that's definitely, and I don't know that's the way Philadelphia. That I think that becomes the biggest question, and we'll get into this. Like, I know what kind of game the Chiefs would like to play, right? They'd like to play the same kind of game they've been playing for a long time. They'd like to control the ball. They'd like to not make mistakes. They'd like to, you know, lean into the short passing game with all these different weapons, and they'd like to, you know, go blitz crazy on deep. We know what they want to do. The Chiefs to me have the clearer, here's how we want to play this game. The Eagles, that's where I'm not sure what they would prefer.
It's interesting because the Eagles, you know, they're not, at least in my opinion, a ball control team, even though they run the ball a lot. Isn't that interesting? Like they lean on the run, but they're not a ball control team. And you can see multiple times throughout this season and the playoffs, including the NFC Championship game, when Saquon just breaks one loose. I mean, go back to that NFC Championship game in Washington marching the ball down the field. I mean, they took like 9 minutes off the clock to kick off that game. And the very first play from scrimmage for the Eagles, Saquon breaks off a 60-plus yard run and scores. Like, just, you know, just like that. Like, the Eagles run the ball a ton, but they're not a ball control team. They're unique in that regard because they can air it out. They've got dynamic wide receivers and, of course, Dallas Goedert and all of that. But they prefer to have the big play, whether it's on the ground or through the air. And that's what's going to be a little bit different, I think, for Kansas City to defend that.
Man, have the Chiefs corners ever had more this year pressure on them to prevent not only those long runs, which we talked about a little bit last week, but you also have to, you know, keep an eye on and make sure over the top that you don't get beat by two all world wide receivers and then Dallas Goedert. That's the thing. Everyone says, oh, the Chiefs would like to, you know, make the Eagles throw on them. And I'm like, well, yeah, that means you stop Saquon. And I do think the Chiefs will find some success there, but that doesn't make it easy, right? Philadelphia's got this dynamic offense for a reason. Philadelphia, and this is, again, and we'll dig in here in just a second, but think about this for just a second. Like, Philadelphia, what do you want to do if you're Philadelphia? Are you reactionary to what the Chiefs present you? Or is there a specific way you'd prefer to go about it? I think there are a lot of things for them to think about. Again, the Chiefs, I think we all kind of know what they want to do. Philadelphia's got a decision to make. We'll talk about that next. Sports Daily, all Brockton Caster. Don't go away on a Monday.
Take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on a Monday. Tommy Caster, Jacob Albrecht here with you. We've been talking Super Bowl coverage as we kick off the Super Bowl week, Chiefs and Eagles. And Jacob, we continue on this conversation that we started before the break about the strategies for both of these teams as we get into the Super Bowl week. And I'm with you. I mean, I feel like it's fairly clear the way the Chiefs want to play this game, but the Eagles have an opportunity, I think, to be able to do it a couple of different ways.
They do, because you know what they want to do most of the time? They'd like to start with Saquon Barkley, right? They obviously want to start every game that way. The Chiefs, I think, are well equipped, as equipped as any team they will have played, to prevent Saquon from taking the game over. Doesn't mean they're going to stop him. Just means they're, you know, but going into it as capable as any team the Eagles have played. So what if that happens? Then what? Right? Do the Eagles keep going to it? Or do they now try to do what they did against the Commanders and let Jalen Hurts throw it a little bit? And I think that becomes really interesting. If you're the Chiefs, I think you prefer that because it gives Spags more opportunities to go out and try to make him make a mistake. I would guess that the Chiefs will be willing to sell out a little bit to stop the run, both from Saquon and Jalen Hurts, because Jalen Hurts running, it's going to be a major factor. And almost not, you know, it's not that you allow the receivers to do big things, but you're willing to give up some chunk plays, because it allows you to have them make mistakes, allows a Jalen Hurts interception. It allows you to stop their run game. But if you're going to do that, you've got to have a great offensive game plan, because in that scenario, Tom, it could become a little bit of a track meet. And so if you're Philadelphia, then because I think that's what the Chiefs will do. If you're Philadelphia, how do you counter that? I would start with running the ball with Jalen Hurts. That's what I would do. And then I would probably just, you know, let Dallas Goedert eat a little bit like he did against Washington. I think they've got to, Philadelphia's going to have to throw the ball to win this game. They're going to have to. Do they want to, or do they not want to, I think becomes the question. Like, are they going to come in and just acknowledge that and throw it more than maybe they would normally? Or do they do it only because they get forced to do it? And if that's the case, I think they'll be in a little bit of trouble. I think they need to game plan. Like, if I'm Philadelphia, I'm game planning throwing the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one way to look at it. But then, you know, you also, I think you probably lending a little bit of credibility to that thought is the Chiefs have been pretty solid against the run this season defensively. And that's great. But again, it's a different beast entirely with Saquon. You know, and we've seen Kansas City be able to stop the top running backs on a lot of teams throughout the course of this season. And that's great. But I mean, this is something that they haven't faced, you know, thus far. So if you are the Eagles, I mean, I think that's where that conversation comes into play. Like, do you roll the dice with that, knowing that historically this season, the Chiefs have been pretty good against the run, but you also think that your guy is better than the other running backs that the Chiefs have faced throughout the season. And that's true. Like, their guy is better. Their guy is head and shoulders better. He's the best running back in the league. So do you roll the dice with that and just say, you know what, we're gonna beat him. We're gonna beat him on the ground. We think that our running game as a whole, and I'm even including Jalen Hurts into this, is better overall than a really good Chiefs run defense. And that's really, I think, where the chess match comes in.
Oh yeah, I mean,
we're talking about a top 10 rush defense in the league.
Saquon, I don't. So, what's more? this is going to I'm struggling with how to even like present this properly, because Saquon has been the best in the sport this year, no question. Stylistically, though, what's worse for the Chiefs? Saquon and his ability to break them off, and you trust your corners not to let that happen in your secondary, or grinders that can just wear you down like Derrick Henry and James Cook was doing before Buffalo inexplicably went away from him? That's what I mean. Like, I think stylistically, they're as equipped as any team in football to slow down Saquon Barkley. I think run games that get to them are more James Cook style. Like, we're going to grind you down. That's why if I'm Philadelphia, I'm running with Hurts a great deal, right? I'm trying to, it's not so much about breaking off the 60-yard run. It's about controlling things through a multi-pronged run game featuring a healthy Jalen Hurts. That's what I think could get the Chiefs in trouble. Because I don't see, maybe one, I don't know. I don't see a lot of those break-off plays from Bar, and I could be wrong.
I disagree, because how many of those games throughout the season when the Chiefs faced off against a grinding running back, the one that they kept the possession, they kept the ball, they got 3-4 yards of carry, they just leaned on him. How many of those games did the Chiefs win this season? A lot of them. Almost all of them, right?
Yeah.
I think that the bigger concern, the larger concern, is whether you're talking about Barkley or Hurts, them breaking off big runs, getting into the end zone, and then it gets into that track meet type situation. That's what the Chiefs have to avoid. I think you would almost rather have them lean on Saquon and he can't break off a big one, but he's getting 3, 4, 5 yards a carry, and it slows the game down, and the score ultimately is lower. That's the kind of game I think the Chiefs want to play. They've had a lot of success with running backs like Derrick Henry and Joe Mixon and James Cook and other guys like that, where the game has slowed down and they're the grinding running back, because ultimately the final score ends up lower, and I think that plays into the Chiefs' hands in the way that they want to play.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, low scoring game. Yeah, it would. And the Chiefs are going to want to run the ball too, by the way, like at least a little bit, because the best thing you can do against that Philly offense, and it's the most obvious thing in the world, is to keep Philadelphia off the field. So I think the Chiefs, whether it's running or the short, I don't think the Chiefs all of a sudden decide in this game, Tommy, all right, let's really start to air it out here.
No, I don't think so.
So especially with the interior pressure Eagles can create.
Don't be surprised if they pick their spots. Like, don't be surprised if they find opportunities with, potentially Worthy over the top and like that sort of thing.
We keep saying that. We keep saying that, and they just don't do it. And that's okay. Like, I don't have a problem with it, honestly. Like, it's all right. And I thought Buffalo would be the game where they would, if they were going to. The issue that I would see with that, those shots, is that Philadelphia does have some corners that can make you pay, and they get pressure up the middle. I mean, the interior, you want to go real deep X's and O's, Tommy. You want to go strength on strength. The Chiefs interior line versus the Eagles interior defensive line probably is the most important matchup of this game. I mean, in most games, that's not like football. People will tell you it's always in the trenches and all, and vice versa, right? Can the Chiefs create pressure and generate pressure on this great Eagles O-line? I don't remember. It was Dan Israel or Felix Johnson last week, both of whom we'll have again this week, who talked about in the line. But line play could absolutely determine this game. I don't think there's any question about that, because it's strength on strength for both teams. Right, you have one of the best that's ever done it, and Chris Jones on one side going up against one of the best lines in football. Their health is something we need to watch, and something I haven't even checked in on yet. And then on the other side, it's kind of two of those guys, two really good young interior defensive linemen against arguably, and I know Joe Tooney's not over there now, but one of the best interior lines offensively in football for the Chiefs. How is that dictated? Patrick Mahomes is certainly more adept at dealing with that than Jalen Hurts is. If that pressure comes, he can deal with it better, I think, than Hurts can. But again, the propensity to run the ball and take off, both these quarterbacks are probably going to run around quite a bit. I haven't even looked at, what is Mahomes' rushing prop? Because is it still like 29 or something?
I think it was a little bit higher than that, at least last time I looked.
I'm gonna pull that up as we're talking, because that's he does this in Super Bowls. We've talked about that a little bit. Just go look at his rushing totals in the Super Bowls to find out like how much of a part of that. It's almost like he's just like nothing to lose here the rest of the way. Let's let it all hang. Yeah, it's 30. So but it's, you know, so it's right there, but he goes over that. He's been over that a lot in Super Bowl games. And he could again, because that pressure could come up the middle and be rolling out a lot. Here's what I'll bet you. Patrick Mahomes rolls out a ton in this game, Tommy. Like he is going to move out of that pocket quickly because the Eagles can get there quickly.
Yeah, as long as he can get a little bit of containment and like have that edge to be able to get out of the pocket at least, then I like his chances. And I know I've been harping on this, that some of the most effective offensive plays from the Chiefs in the AFC Championship was when he was able to roll out to his right. And he was able to get that protection. You know, where, yeah, if he stayed in the pocket, it was going to collapse pretty quickly. But him being able to at least get out to the edge, and then he's got the choice. And there's not a better quarterback in the NFL who can throw on the run than Patrick Mahomes. And so if he can break that contain and be able to find somebody over the top, that might be where they take their shots. That might be where you find Worthy going down the sideline, or, you know, even like a DeAndre Hopkins cutting over the middle, or whatever that looks like, or even a Kelce camping out somewhere to get a first down. Or like we saw in the AFC Championship game, Mahomes uses his legs to get the first down and move the chains. Like there are a lot of different advantages to being able to do that, but it starts with him being able to actually get out of the pocket entirely and have at least enough protection to be able to do so.
Both teams feel like they can do what they want. I got to think that coming into it, they both probably feel very comfortable in what they do. And so then, Tommy, it comes down to this, and we'll talk about this a lot this week. What quarterback are you taking? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like all of this is presented out there, when neither team is going to have some clear cut advantage going in, when both coaching staffs are currently bringing it the way that they're both currently bringing it, with versatility and finding all of that, when all of that is out there. We've got two great defenses, two great offenses, great playmakers all over the field. It's a Pro Bowl roster out there. It ultimately comes down to the quarterbacks.
And how do you not take the guy that's got three titles?
Well, you do, but that's right. What I mean. Like that's you. Like there isn't an underdog in this game. There's not. And so you look squarely at quarterback. Which one is more likely to make a mistake? Neither of them make a ton of them. Right. So if you don't bank on either of them making mistakes, which I wouldn't, it's which quarterback is capable of making more big plays, making that play they've got to make. And that's where, for me, you look Mahomes, right? You look Mahomes. It's just like, this is his spot. This is where he shines. This is where Mahomes and Kelce shine, and Chris Jones, like those three dudes. It's always been about those three guys and the coach, and these are the spots where they always shine. This is a part of what has made them so great, is these kinds of games are what they get up for. And that's, to me, like, you just, it kind of gets that simple. But when we're talking about the Super Bowl, like, that's it. Like, these three guys in a game where it is like, throw your hands up on paper, you take those three guys and Andy Reid. I don't know how you don't.
I think you're right. And I think that, you know, you also have to keep in mind that they've got a supporting cast of guys that, you know, can step up at any time and provide you the big play, whether it's the score, whether it's a big defensive stop, you know, moving the chains when it's crucial, whatever that looks like. Like, they've got enough of the talent around them. I mean, think of, you know, a future Hall of Famer in DeAndre Hopkins. Think about, you know, Kareem Hunt, who has found his way back and has been an incredibly effective running back. You know, you've got defensive guys outside of Chris Jones. Like, Trent McDuffie is one of the best corners in the league, and Justin Reed has played great this season. You've got guys coming off the edge that are coming up that have played better this season than in years past. Like, I think Felix Anudike Uzomah, there were questions about whether or not he would be an effective edge rusher in the NFL. And I think the jury might still be out a little bit on that, but he at least has played pretty well throughout the playoffs. George Karloftis. I mean, there are names all over this roster, you know, that can get it done for you. And, you know, there was something that was being shared around social media over the weekend. I think Trey Wingo shared it, about the Chiefs draft class from 2022 and how you know, none of those guys have ever lost a playoff game. Like, how wild is that? You know, you've got guys like Trent McDuffie and Nazi Johnson, and I know Sky Moore was in that draft class, and they're like, they're, you know, it is what it is. But, like, there are other guys that are in that draft class. I think maybe Brian Cook was in that draft class. None of those guys have ever lost a playoff game. Like, that's championship mentality. That's winner's mentality. And those are all supporting guys. Not all of them. Most of them are supporting guys still on that team, still on that roster. And so you come into that championship DNA, you know, for a chance to create a dynasty. So, yeah, it's going to be those three guys. It always has been.
And
the foundation,
and
the tent poles, and all
of
that.
You get to join the team that those three guys play for.
But you've also got solid supporting players on that team, too.
Absolutely. There's no question, and that has to be a part of a dynasty. Everybody benefits from those three guys. Everybody does. Andy Reid does. Brett Veach does. Clark Hunt does. Mark Donovan does.
Like, think about the guys,
everybody,
by the way. Like,
everybody looks smarter and better because you have those
everybody. Everybody always talks about Brady and Belichick and Gronkowski and like all that. You know, you ever talk about Matthew Slater in the Patriots dynasty? Like, right. You know, or like Chris Hogan. Like, anybody ever talk about
Deion
him?
Deion Branch.
Like, they had James White. Like, they had guys that were Danny Woodhead that were like supporting characters, but they had the championship DNA because they had been there. They knew how to do it. And they were integral parts of that dynasty as well.
They 100% were. And then Brady went to Tampa Bay and won another one.
Yep.
So don't mistake it.
Right.
Right. Like, let's not forget the straw that stirs the drink in the NFL. And there aren't very many of them like that. We just happen to have two of them back to back. They are soul crushers. Like, yes, they have to have it around them. And more so Brady, because Mahomes hadn't been playing long enough yet. Brady, how many generations of that Patriots roster? Brady didn't have that guy. Like Mahomes has had Kelsey and Jones his entire career. I mean, what is this, year 8 for him? Did Brady have any player for 8 years with him, especially a Hall of Fame type player?
He had Gronk with him for like that duration.
For some of it, but not for the whole first
not
part
the,
of that
yeah,
dynasty.
Not the whole first part of it, but had him for multiple years, the second half of that dynasty for sure.
So it's, but it's what I'm saying is like all of this stuff, like all of it's out there. There's so many great players on both sides of the ball. There's great coaching. There's all of it. Just look at quarterback. That's what I do. But it seems like a cop out, but it's not a cop out. It's the history of this sport. It's the history of this league. Anywho, we're going to talk a little Royals baseball when we come back. We'll get to these NBA trades on the way out, though. Want to tell you that you can listen to KFH Radio for your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning is easy. All you got to do is download the free Odyssey app, log in, listen to KFH Radio. Listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. It includes travel and accommodations for 4 to Las Vegas, plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info with the national contest at KFHradio.com. You'll stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas' premium sports viewing destination. Visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim. Good luck, everybody. Pretty crazy contest we got going there for you. We'll still give away some HTO later in the show as well. Little Royals talk, little NBA talk here on a Reaction Monday. And not to fear, a whole lot more Chiefs talk coming this week, including tomorrow when we bring in the executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, who is and should be at least in New Orleans, will report boots on the ground for us. It is Super Bowl week. Can you believe it? It's going to be here real fast. We're all now we get all the, you know, the glitz and the glam and all the silly stuff and, you know, being there for it. It is everything but football. Like it's craziness. And so, you know, all that X's and O's stuff happened last week. Now it's just like, what are they going to do? Study in the hotel? You know, you can tell Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, they can't go drink beer on Bourbon Street.
They're probably going to do that.
They'll do whatever they need to do, just like they do every other time. All right, we'll come back. We'll have a little Royals talk, a little NBA talk when we wrap up this hour of Sports Daily.
You gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. We are happy to be joined by Jalen Thompson here off the top of the segment at Jalen Thompson on X, Royals reporter for the KC Star. Carlos Estevez, Jalen, keeping the Royals in the news last week after we talked to you. So let's get into it. Boy, it certainly never hurts to have more bullpen arms, right? What did you think of the move?
Yeah. Hey, guys. Good to see you guys again. I thought the move was really shrewd. I thought it was a savvy move. I thought it was something that the Royals could have needed. If they look at their offseason plans, you know, everyone knows they wanted to get a middle of the order of bat, but that didn't resonate in the way they wanted it to this offseason. So they pivoted. And when they pivoted, they went to the bullpen. And they thought that the best way to get this done was to get a reliever in Carlos Estevez to be down there, have an opportunity to finish some games alongside Lucas Erceg and really just shorten the game, which is what every team wants to do in the majors. When you get six from your starters, then you want your bullpen to lock it down. And that's what the Royals are trying to do. And they have some really good options to do that.
Yeah, it's certainly pretty tantalizing, Jalen, thinking about the different combinations and the different buttons that can be pressed in the bullpen this upcoming season, whether we're talking about Estevez closing out games and Erceg in the eighth or vice versa. Hunter Harvey, if healthy, being able to, you know, come in and be a pretty integral part of that bullpen as well. I think what it does for me, and tell me if I'm off base here, but I think what it does for me is I think it solidifies the notion that Chris Bubich will probably be back in the rotation, maybe as the fifth starter. And they're probably not going to use Michael Lorenzen much at all out of the bullpen. Like, he's probably solidified his place in the rotation as well. I think that with that signing of Estevez, that kind of, at least for me, tells me that. Is that off base?
No, you're absolutely pretty much right. We had Royals rally this past Saturday, and we talked to JJ Piccolo, and he said pretty much the similar things. He was saying that the rotation is going to feature Michael Lorenzen as pretty much that number four. And the fifth spot is going to come down to the front runners of Chris Bubich or Alec Marsh. And it's going to be whoever wins that competition in spring training. And, you know, they're still going to try to look to bring along Kyle Wright slowly. And they still have Daniel Lynch and Noah Cameron and others that can potentially fill in some starts down the road. But for right now in spring training, look for Bubich and Marsh to be in that competition for that fifth spot. In that bullpen, like you mentioned, Hunter Harvey's coming back. They said that he should be on track and feel well to pitch in spring training. And, you know, they kind of got what they need, but who knows? Any of the injuries happen, things like that, but you're absolutely right in that assessment.
So what do you make of this being the preference, this bullpen arm with Estevez, Jalen Thompson joining us on KC Star, over adding a middle of the order outfield bat? Was it either or? Do you think they tried on the bat and then settled on this? Do you think this was their preference? Walk us through what you're hearing on how they've approached those two needs and investing the big money in Estevez and not a bat.
So they tried. They tried to get a bat all offseason. I know you guys saw some of the reports out there where they potentially were in on Anthony Santander. They were potentially in on Jurickson Profar. We talked to Royals owner John Sherman, and he alluded to the fact that, you know, they tried to get some marquee outfielders on the market. It just didn't go their way. So they pivoted to the bullpen because Royals manager Matt Cottrell was talking to JJ Piccolo at winter meetings, and he said it'd be a good idea to potentially get another reliever. So when the reliever market in free agency and the trades this offseason started to move in the last couple of weeks, the Royals kind of got on that train, and they realized that getting Carlos Estevez was the best option for them to win games right now. It helped increase the win profile of the team, and that's what they want to do this season. So they went with the reliever option, and I think it was a good decision, because if you look at some of the names that are out there right now, to be that middle of the order bat, it kind of isn't as strong as it was when the offseason started. So they're going to bank a lot on Hunter Renfro to bounce back. They're going to look at MJ Melendez. Hopefully he can come together. And then they also mentioned this one key tidbit too. They said at Royals rally that Michael Massey and Jonathan India will get some reps in left field during spring training, and Michael Garcia will get some reps in center field and could also get some game time experience there this season.
You know, Jalen, I know that there was one point during the season last year where the Royals outfielders combined had the worst OPS in Major League Baseball. And that was when Hunter Renfroe was really struggling. And then, you know, we saw MJ Melendez not really able to come around, and Kyle Isbell wasn't contributing a ton. Now, they did, especially Renfroe, turn things around later on in the season. What do you think the chances are? You mentioned a bounce back potentially from Hunter Renfroe. What do you think the chances are that we'll see, you know, those main guys in the outfield be able to contribute offensively at a better clip than what they did a year ago?
I think you will see Hunter Renfroe kind of bounce back to what he normally has done in his MLB career. It's just a lot of experience over there with him. And, you know, having an offseason to get back where he needs to be and, you know, just come in and your second go around with the Royals, you know the system, you know the environment. A lot of people forget that he was a free agent that came over last season. So he had to learn everything. He had to learn Kansas City. He had to kind of adjust to his new team. And now that he's got a year under his belt, I think he'll come back in and he might be what you're used to seeing from Hunter Renfroe. As far as MJ Melendez, we've seen a lot of things. Like he's changed his batting stance quite a bit. He's worked on some things a little bit to get back in form, get to the ball a little quicker while he's at the plate. So maybe that can spark something. But the Royals know that he has talent, and they've seen his talent before. They just need to see it more consistently. And I think that with having Jonathan India and Michael Massey potentially working at different positions and maybe getting some starts in the outfield, you're going to see Melendez go from left field some to right field some. And they're going to play a lot of guys all over the field. But you're absolutely right. It has to be those two guys to really spark this lineup, because if they don't, then they're going to have to continue to rely on their pitching to win them games.
Which is, remember they traded Brady Singer, but I think it's okay. I think their lineup did get better. I think I'm good with the plan now when they brought in Lorenzen, and I think this is all going to be good, and they're going to be good, and the depth in the rotation will become key. Jalen, we appreciate it. We'll have more next week. We are so close to spring training, and we're so excited to have you with us through that, to sort of walk through it all, and maybe gubernatorial runs I'm hearing from Dayton Moore and other, you know, other things that are happening there with the Royals. But we appreciate it. You can follow Jalen on X at Jalen with an O Thompson. You can find his work at the KC Star. Lots of good stuff there right now. Appreciate it, Jalen. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you guys. Look forward to spring training. It's going to be fun.
All right, there goes Jalen Thompson. I saw on his X, he's commenting on the Royal Rumble. I actually got to watch the Royal Rumble. I didn't even realize I got it. It was a couple of buddies were like, oh, is anybody watching? I'm like, man, I haven't watched anything in a long time. I don't think I can see it. And they're like, it's on Peacock. I was like, wait, I have that. And so I fired that up and got a little Royal Rumble. Didn't catch the Grammys, but I got a little pop culture in my pro wrestling weekend.
By the way, you mentioned it. How do you feel about Dayton Moore potentially running for governor of Kansas? That apparently he's exploring a run that was announced in Kansas City earlier today.
He'll be good on the campaign trail. You know, he probably should have run the last time before, you know, if he'd have run in like 20, I don't know what years they are, 17 or whatever it was, he'd have been on fire. Like JJ Piccolo should run for governor right now. Yeah. But no, I think his personality fits it well. Dayton Moore was, and I mean this like respectfully, professionally, like was a pleasure to cover because he made time. He was very thoughtful. Any time that you got a chance to talk to him, and it, good, bad, or indifferent, whether it was good stuff or bad stuff or whatever it was, he's got the right temperament for it. Doesn't surprise me. Could make a lot of sense, honestly.
Hey, the only thing that I'll say is that, you know, you've probably got really crucial parts of state government, like the state treasurer and lieutenant governor and like all of these other positions. As long as he doesn't hang on to them a couple of years too long, then I think he'll be a good
governor. They won't be his decisions. I think the most interesting thing about it is
that
the
joke?
Timing.
Is that that was a good joke.
Yeah.
Because
he hung on. Yeah.
Hung on to those guys way too long. Yeah.
That's right. don't discount the fact that there's stadium talk either, which could be an interesting tie-in to that.
Point.
So that we'll pay attention to that a little bit. That's going to be interesting. Real quick, Tommy, we got to cram this in. Luka gets traded for, like, I was with the masses. Luka trade. I thought this was a joke when I saw this. What night was that? Saturday night.
Yeah.
I'm like, late, the Mavs late traded Saturday night. Luka. Like, the Mavs traded Luka. Okay. Like, that's weird. They just made the NBA finals, and I know he's been hurt a lot this year. And then you see what they get back, and it's like Anthony Davis and nothing. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean? Like, this is the NBA. They should have got about 46 first-round picks for Luka Doncic. Like, what is happening here? That's it. Like, it's nothing. It's a 29 first and Anthony Davis and a guy, and I admittedly don't watch a ton of NBA anymore, that I've never heard of before. Okay. Well, that's a terrible trade. And if that wasn't terrible enough, then you see what the Spurs gave up and what the kid, like, what the De'Aaron Fox trade looks like. And you're like, that's what you do when you trade. Like, what on earth? How do you not get the moon for if you really want to trade Luka? Which, okay, I still think that's a really stupid thing to do. You put him out on the open market. You don't just lock into one guy because you want 32-year-old Anthony Davis that bad. Like, what an it is the worst trade I've ever seen of this generation. Like, you got to go back to like Herschel Walker.
Yeah, I was thinking about that trade. Wayne Gretzky got traded at one point that you probably think about that move.
But that
one
where, you know, yeah, the Gretzky side of that one won. The Cowboys side of the Herschel Walker trade won.
The Lakers side of this trade is clearly going to win. What's wild to me is the coordinated PR effort, like, to smear Luka Doncic out of his, you know, on his way out of town. Like, all of these concerns about his conditioning, and like, that's why the Mavs wanted to move him. They were concerned about his weight, and like, that all may be true, but like, that didn't come up until like middle of the day yesterday, as people were roundly criticizing this trade. You saw just this mechanism of PR probably originating from the GM for Dallas, like, talking about how it was a culture thing and how big of a deal it was to make sure that he was like conditioned, and that was a too much work for them, and like things like that. They clearly saw like just the backlash from people, and now they're trying to like smear this guy as he heads out of town.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You think Dirk ever had conditioning questions?
All the time.
Like, come on. Come on. This isn't going to work for the Mavericks.
I just don't even know how you can justify, you know, this move.
You think you're the smartest person in the room? You think you're smarter than everybody else? The only justification, the only way that the Mavs look good here is if Luka's conditioning does lead to a lot of limited playing time, which I don't think is going to happen, but that would be it. But even if that's it, Tommy, even if that's it, you didn't get enough for him.
Well,
that only justifies it if he doesn't end up being the player we all think he already is for a long time. It's that you didn't get anything for him.
You trade a guy that you have conditioning concerns about because you're worried he's going to get injured, and you bring in a guy who gets injured more than Luka does. That's the part of it that makes zero sense at all.
They want to win with defense. All right.
Good luck.
Good luck with that. It's worst trade. I still can't believe they did that. And by the way, I don't know that Luka and LeBron are going to wear. They're not going to play a lick of defense in LA now. It's going to be rough out there. Anyway, whatever. That just blows your mind. We'll be back. More Sports Daily right after.